What I love about Toronto is the fabulous theater scene we've got going on here.
Great entertainment.
The new wave of R&B and hip-hop that's coming.
Well, everyone's different. Everyone's unique and...
Everyone's ready to go. Everyone's ready to have a good time.
I'm in the urban scene myself.
I'm into jazz.
The reggae scene in Toronto is
good. Hip-hop.
Like, I'm going to an art show tonight, actually, at Public.
Salsa, merengue, cumbia.
It rocks. I love it. Yeah.
Hey, how you doing? You're listening to Big City, Small World. I'm Nanava Duncan, filling in for your girl, Garvia Bailey. Today's show is packed with great music, which makes sense because Toronto's all about the music right now. Last week was Canadian Music Week, and next week are the Junos. The Junos, of course, are the country's top honors in music, and the actual award show is happening next Sunday. But there are a lot of concerts going on around the city for Juno Fest. Juno Fest is a two-day concert bonanza. Next Friday and Saturday, over 100 bands, including nominees, are going to be on stage at different venues downtown. And that includes some of Toronto's best artists like Bedouin Soundclash, Royal Wood, Silver Solitaire, Juno nominee Eternia, who we had on the show last week. And if you're looking to go out, there's one show I think you should check out. It's packed with this year's nominees. Next Friday, the world music category is going to be on stage. Mighty Popo, the Roberto Lopez Project, Jamie Stone, and Pacifica will all be playing at Lula Lounge. And for Pacifica, it's a bit of a homecoming. They're a three-piece band with roots in Peru, Barbados, and Canada. Sylvana Kane is the lead singer, and she grew up here in the city. And like a lot of artists who inject their culture into their art, Sylvana puts her Peruvian roots right into Pacifica's sound, which is a blend of indie rock and bossa nova and Afropop and dub. Plus, she sings in Spanish. Here's Pacifica with a track off their album Super Magique. This is Doce Meses.
Tus labios.
That was Pacifica with their track Doce Meses. Their album Super Magique is nominated for Juno in the World Music category. They're going to be performing with other world nominees at, guess where? Lula Lounge next Friday. You're listening to Big City Small World on CBC Radio 1 99.1. I'm Nanaba Duncan, filling in for Garvia Bailey. Lots on the show today. Here's what's on the bill. A little later on, the story of Toronto actor Vivek Shraya. He goes back to his Hindu temple after years of staying away because of his identity as a queer Indian. Big City Small World contributor Aparta Bhandari is going to bring us that story later. And in hip-hop, what's the opposite of whack? It's dope. MC Abdominal is going to break things down for you in his short hip-hop 101 lesson. And I'll also tell you more about how to get involved in CBC's Hip-Hop Summit. But first, this week, a lot of people were upset to hear that the City of Toronto denied Music Africa its permit to run Afrofest, which is the African music festival that goes on every summer in the city. This was supposed to be Afrofest's 23rd year at Queen's Park, where their numbers have grown to about 50,000. But because of certain infractions and complaints, things like noise, traffic, damage to the park grounds, and failure to clean up, the city had denied the permit for Afrofest. But just yesterday, the people at Afrofest met with city councilors, and now they're being given a chance to present a plan next week to still hold the festival at Queen's Park in June. So the dream isn't dead just yet. Michael Storr is the president of Music Africa, and I've got him on the phone with me for a few questions. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm better now. So what happened at the meeting?
Well, I think the first thing that came out of the meeting was just managing to clear the air a little bit about the, you know, you mentioned right up front about all these violations and so on. And, you know, to cut a long story short, there's not really much in them in terms of and many of them are actually untrue. I mean, we haven't gone music past 11 p.m. We've made a tremendous difference in hiring a professional garbage crew for the last couple of years. And I think after a relatively short conversation, we managed to get to the real issue, which is, of course, the actual stress on the park.
Right.
And that is something that we're now given an opportunity to address. We're given an opportunity to try and put together the festival in a way using street closures that does begin to take some of the stress off the park. So just to be given the opportunity to present our case, it's been amazing because it's so much to do with the support that has been shown from people across the city with, you know, emails and phone calls, and the councilors have heard.
So specifically, what's going to go into this plan then?
Well, what we'll be looking at is closing off Queen's Park Circle, some of it, also Wellesley Street, and then moving some of our vendors over onto the street. So we can take stress off the park, at least have, you know, move some of the heavy installations. And, you know, Queen's Park is getting crowded. I think that's a great step for the festival.
Right.
But again, you know, what that looks like in the longer term future is going to be a huge challenge.
Now, am I right? You wanted, before all this, you wanted to make the park sort of larger in area and have those street closures. Why is that now okay?
I suppose that it's been inevitable. It's had to happen. I think they were reluctant to do those things because they really didn't want to see us continue to grow in Queen's Park. And I think that was the general view of if you put street closures, then, you know, you're expanding the festival on Queen's Park. And I think that the point has got through that there are other ways to approach that, at least to make it more manageable for the park in the short term. And I had to emphasize again with the city that it was last summer that was the madness, and there were some legitimate grievances by anybody who lived close to Queen's Park.
Right.
Between, you know, G20 and double Luminato concerts and Cyndi Lauper and Gay Pride and, you know, Canada Day. And certainly the park had, you know, undergone, took a battering last summer.
Right. So how much time have you got for this, for your plan? And when will you know for sure what's going to happen?
We don't have that meeting specifically set. The timeline that was looked at was in a week. So presumably sometime next week we'll have an opportunity to put forward a more detailed plan to the city. I'm confident that we can put together a plan that can take stress off the park, as I always have been confident we'll be able to. And, yeah, really appreciate the opportunity to be heard. And I think that opportunity to be heard, again, was created by the number of people that showed their support. Power to our people.
Yes, I agree. And you know what? I support you, and you know that. So thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and we'll keep you updated for sure.
Great.
Okay, bye.
That was Michael Storr, president of Music Africa, which is the organization that puts on Afrofest in Queen's Park. I just called him up to find out about the festival and how there's still a chance it's going to happen this year. I got to say, it's hard for me to be unbiased about this one. I love Afrofest, and I've gone for years. I love that it's right downtown and that so many people look forward to it in the summer. So I'm going to do some reminiscing here. Last year, there was a band called Nappy Tappy that was on stage. They were a Zimbabwean group that play an instrument with a lot of names, the Imbira, Kalimba or thumb piano. This is Nappy Tappy's song. It's called Mapatza.
Who's
That song is called Mapadza by Napi Tapi, a Toronto-based Zimbabwean group that played last year at Afrofest. For most of us in Toronto, Afrofest is our way of celebrating the richness of Africa and all the cultures that spring from it. And in the early 1900s, there was a man in Jamaica who truly appreciated the strength of African people. Marcus Garvey was a prolific speaker, publisher, and entrepreneur. His ideas inspired men like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. So he's like the great granddaddy of the civil rights movement. And he was a complicated character. So for a lot of reasons, his story isn't widely known. A play about his life and works called I, Marcus Garvey is on at the Paper Mill Theater until March 27th. Here to talk about the man and the play is director Roma Spencer. Hi, Roma.
Hello. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm very good.
Good, good. Special hello as well to all the CBCers out there.
Okay. Very good. So let's get into who Marcus Garvey was. Can you tell me about him?
Sure. Well, Marcus Garvey is today's, of course, the national hero of Jamaica. He was born in St. Anne's Bay in Jamaica. He mobilized millions of Africans at home and abroad. Here was a man who was traveling throughout the entire Caribbean, had the audacity to even travel throughout the United States, mobilizing the post-emancipated African to see themselves, to carry themselves and their race with pride, you know, that to have, talking about having economic power for the African, saying to them, let Africa be for Africans at home and abroad, wanting to redeem, see Africa as your home, redeem Africa as your own, and for the European powers to leave Africa to Africans.
Hmm. Yeah. And did you know all this when you were growing up? What?
Hell no. we were taught that, you know, certainly in my household, and not just mine, but many, many other Caribbean households, that he was a buffoon, he was a clown, he was a charlatan.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you never spoke about Marcus Garvey with pride.
You were born in Trinidad.
Yes.
Not in Jamaica.
No, I was born.
But you still got this lesson about Garvey.
Mm-hmm. You knew of him, okay? But in depth and studying and understanding his ideology, his philosophy, that would have come through self, you know? You wouldn't learn it in school either. It wasn't part of your history lesson. Certainly in my family, you know, I'm not, you know, the things they will say is, no, I'm not interested in going back to Africa. And this clown wanted to take us back to Africa and that sort of thing. And it was more than that. It was not he wanted to take us back to Africa. He was saying to us as well to have economic independence. Certainly the research, the books, they were out there. I mean, people were studying them in the universities, all right? But we didn't at secondary school level. He certainly was not in our history books, okay? It's not until I left school, and certainly as an adult, I started to really learn more about Garvey, and that came through the music, you know. There's a lots of music, lots of songs on Marcus Garvey. The Rastafarians have embraced him as their prophet. So, you know, seeing all these images all the time about Garvey, certainly me, as an Afro-Caribbean woman, I wanted to know a little more. So, you went and you do the research, you did more reading, and then you start to come to your own understanding as to why he wasn't certainly a prophet in his own land.
And what did you find?
Obama has a book called The Audacity of Hope. And every time I hear the phrase, I think of Garvey. Here was a man who had the audacity, yeah? This, you know, simple black man from Jamaica, okay, had the audacity to travel throughout the entire Caribbean, Costa Rica, Panama, Aruba, Curacao. So he spanned the entire Caribbean, the Dutch, the Caribbean, the English-speaking Caribbean, French, Spanish, mobilizing the post-emancipated African, yeah, bringing their struggles to the forefront and enlightening them. He was very much a teacher, okay? He had the audacity to do that. And then, as I said, even the audacity to travel throughout the states when you know, they were lynching black people in the South, risk his life, yeah, going down to the South, mobilizing the post-emancipated African American. It is that kind of audacity that that tickles me about the man.
I get this sense, and from what I've learned too, is that this was a character who's so complicated, right? How did you tackle all of that? That and, you know, how controversial he was. How did you distill this into a play?
What I do is interpret, and I embellish it with a lot of research and reading on Garvey, and so too does the actor. One of the notes that I keep telling him is that you are doing Garvey. You're not playing Garvey. You are doing Garvey. And what that means is that he has to try to get what I call the grapiness of the grapiness of the grapiness of the grapes, but not the grapes. So he has to get the essence mm-hmm. of the man mm-hmm. and bring that to the stage. Because the play is called I, Marcus Garvey. Right. And one may ask ourselves, why the I and not just Marcus Garvey? And I think what the playwright is saying here is that all of us, be it white, black, Chinese, East Indian, there is a bit of Garveyism. There's a bit of Garvey's thoughts, yeah, in all of us.
You know what I love is that my friend and the host of the show is named Garvia, and she was named after Marcus Garvey.
Obviously, because she's of Caribbean descent.
That's right.
Whose family, obviously, were Garveyites.
Yeah, and she was born in Jamaica, too. Yeah. So.
Okay, so they would have been Garveyites.
It's a really special thing,
name
actually.
Her after Garvey, yeah.
So that's Roma. This is Roma Spencer, the director of the play I, Marcus Garvey, which will be running at the Paper Mill Theater until March 27th. Marcus Garvey. A lot of musicians believed in Marcus Garvey's cause, and as a result, his legacy lives on. Here's a track from Noel Ellis, who came to Toronto in the 60s from Kingston, Jamaica. This is his 1979 track with a simple title, Marcus Garvey.
Be free, Lord God, God know a 1983, me say me want it to be free, so I want it, Lord,
That was Marcus Garvey by Toronto reggae pioneer Noel Ellis. You're listening to Big City Small World. I'm Nanaba Duncan, sitting in for Garvia Bailey. Garvia isn't here because she's helping to organize CBC's Hip Hop Summit. It's a celebration of all the great hip hop Canada's produced in the past 25 years, and it's coming together on April the 1st in a free all-day event here in the CBC building. There's going to be some breakdancing, exhibits, visual art, and beatboxing, and you're all invited to come, and it's free, and you're invited, so you have to come. Just go to the website for more details on that. Plus, a couple of days before that, on March 29th, there's going to be an amazing broadcast taping of some of Canada's best rappers, including the Dream Warriors, Shad, Chaos, and Mishimi, and there's a lot more than that. And that show is going to be on the radio and streamed live online. But because it's an exclusive broadcast taping, there's only one way you can get in. You got to win tickets. And here's how you do it. Go to cbc.ca/hiphop and fill in a ballot. That's cbc.ca/hiphop. You can enter right up until Tuesday, and we're going to be picking two winners a day until then. Now, if you're not all that familiar with hip-hop, I have a mini lesson for you, courtesy of MC Abdominal. This is called Hip-Hop 101.
Hello, party people in the place to be, i.e. the CBC. This is the MC called Abs, short for Abdominal, here with Hip-Hop 101. Before we continue, though, I must address the two little initials that preceded my name, because they're really quite pivotal. In case you missed them, I'll mention them again. The M and the C.
What do they represent?
Well, first and foremost, master of ceremony. But far as definitions go, that's not the only one. Also, move the crowd. Plus mic controller. Confused by it now? Don't be. MCing means rapping.
And how is that different from hip-hop?
You're asking, or maybe not, but the question's still relevant. See, rapping or MCing is just one element of the four that comprise this culture that we call hip-hop.
So what are the others?
Graffiti, plus turntablism, aka DJing, and can't forget to mention b-boying, also known as breakdancing. Masters of all these elements in this great land in terms of MCing. Of course, we got maestro, pioneer of the art in this land of white snow.
But like, whoa, what about the ladies, punk?
Sure, we got Mishimi bringing that Jamaican funk. Moving west, swollen members in the Rascals. Out east, Classified, who also raps well, along with countless others in this country.
But what about the DJs, keeping it funky?
Well, BM, a.k.a. before Maestro, was Ron Nelson. On the radio, The Fantastic Voyage was the name of his program. Really was the start of hip-hop in this whole land. Almost 30 years ago, talking way back, laid the groundwork for Dopey and A-Track. Both world champions from this very country. So many DJs here, young and hungry. Not to mention B-boys and B-girls. Canadian dancers, some of the best in the world. Zeb Rock, Dedos, Bag of Tricks, Boogie Brats, and can't forget those badass chicks called Shebang Crew. But now let's move to graffiti writers. Without a doubt, the two pioneers in this country are Daze and Moran, both members of the legendary crew TCM. Moving west, you'll find the AA crew, and that'll have to do for this Canuck who's who of hip-hop. Now, of course, that's just the tip-top of the iceberg in this land of icebergs, because our remaining time together will be devoted to a short glossary of hip-hop vocab. Fresh means good, as does hype or dope, and whack is the opposite for those taking notes. Guap is money, or you could say cream, a particularly Toronto-centric term, a scene. Means understand or just a point of exclamation, comes from Toronto's large Jamaican population. This education quickly coming to an end. Once again, my name is Abs. And just before I send you on your ways, one last phrase, no doubt, in hip-hop, when you leave, you say peace out.
MC Abdominal, yo, that was dope. Toronto Master of Ceremonies MC Abdominal with a mini lesson in hip-hop. Hip-hop is all about words put to a beat. And even though most rappers rhyme for their community and for people on the scene, it's always nice to be recognized by people outside of hip-hop. Because really, hip-hop is poetry. Roland Pemberton knows what I'm talking about. He's a rapper, also known as Cadence Weapon, who lives in Edmonton. In 2009, he was named Poet Laureate of that city. And he's also going to be on stage as part of the Hip Hop Summit at CBC. He's here in studio to talk about his life with hip hop. Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very, very good. So when did you first discover hip hop culture?
Well, it's been a part of my life. It was my dad who really brought rap. Just he had a radio show for 25 years on CJSR called The Black Experience in Sound. And so, yeah, I was hearing a lot of rap all the time. My dad, he came to my my grad in a long-sleeve DMX promotional T-shirt.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. So this
That's awesome.
So this gives you a perspective of
where. And what did your mom wear?
She was wearing a dress.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So when did you decide to, you know, take part in it?
Well, when I was probably like 12, I don't know, I would just find myself thinking like, oh man, it would be cool to rap over this kind of thing, or why doesn't anybody rap over these kind of beats? And I felt like there was just this total pocket of music that was totally uncovered in the world of rap. You know, I used to think, why don't people rap over like video game soundtracks, or why hasn't anybody rapped over you know, She Blinded Me with Science, you know, by Thomas Dolby? And I thought, yeah, maybe I should do it. And also, you know, it seemed like it was a natural progression, you know, hearing my dad talk about it so much. And you know, my uncle, he's a jazz musician, and it just seemed like it made a lot of sense for me, you know.
So what was your dad's answer when he said, when you were saying, you know, I want to rap over Thomas Dolby's music?
He's like, first, there was this one day, I'll never forget it. It's when he was hosting a radio show, you know, on Saturdays, as usual. And I went with him, and I co-hosted. I got to help program the show. You know, so I was picking the rap songs and everything. It was just a really formative moment for me, as you can imagine. And somebody saw us in the hallway, one of his colleagues, and he was like, hey, so Rolly, do you want to be a DJ when you grow up? And before I could say yes, 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 my dad was like, no, he wants to get a real job. Right. But I still did end up becoming a DJ and a rapper.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, but
and I think you've kind of made it a job. So did you eventually say to your dad, actually, I seriously want to do this?
Well, the big turning point was my my high school grad. I rapped at it.
Oh, nice.
I rapped a song about how school is great and how graduating is really cool. And I was wearing an all-white suit and I had a cane. And I was sweating profusely. I was extremely nervous.
How did he respond?
He loved it, you know.
That's great.
I mean, yeah, it was a big, big moment. And I was like, maybe I should, you know, keep this up.
So do you think that Canadian hip-hop has its own sound?
Definitely. I feel like Canadian hip-hop has a very specific regional identity.
Really?
Yeah. And I would say it's more so in the middle of the country. I mean, I'm from Edmonton and I have like this focus on prairie rap. And I feel like the most rap zones in Canada to me are Winnipeg and Saskatoon. I used to call Saskatoon, I still do, Saskatoon is Rapskatoon to me.
Rapskatoon. You know?
Anytime I roll through there, anytime we're on tour, the shows are the hypest shows. You know?
Wow.
People, it's like this this secret to most people. Outside of the prairie community. But in the prairies, we know it's like rap is the thing.
So what does it actually sound like? Like, what's the difference?
Well, okay, I've always felt like a lot of the rap in the different parts of Canada somewhat mirror the places below them in the States in a lot of ways. But then it's still with a uniquely Canadian spin on it. You know, for instance, in the prairies, like, people are rapping about, like, Money Mart and and hockey and what it's like to live in a place that is snowing 10 months out of the year, you know? I mean, like, there's, like, the thing that's most interesting about Canadian rap is there's this very broad spectrum, you know? I mean, and I can appreciate both sides of the spectrum, you know? I can appreciate, you know, somebody, you know, rapping about being poor and living in, you know, Winnipeg equally as I can enjoy Cardinale talking about partying or something, you know?
So why do you think that this hip-hop summit is important right now?
Well, I think the timing is pretty good. I mean, I feel like it's almost like about time, you know? Like, when you think about how long rap has been around, it, just overall, and how long it's been around in the States and, you know, the origins of it, it's like, to appreciate the background of it as well as the future of it at the same time is very valuable for it's I was saying before it's a galvanizing effect. Hopefully when people will, you know, see all the information about this summit, hear about it and think like, oh, I need to check out some of these songs. I didn't know these songs even existed, you know?
I want to know what it means to you, like, to be sharing a stage with Cardi and Maestro and Mishy Me. Like, what does that mean for you?
Well, it's definitely a validation of what I've been doing, you know? Mm. It shows that, you know, you can come from Edmonton and have people pay attention to it, you know? You can come from the prairies and one day, listen, kids, if you're listening to this, you can write those raps. You can write raps about what you want to write about, and people will care across Canada. It's possible. My whole thing is showing what is possible.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Cadence Weapon. He's going to be on stage as part of the Canadian Hip Hop Summit, celebrating 25 years of Canadian hip hop history. If you want tickets to the broadcast taping, go to cbc.ca/hiphop. And here's a little taste of Cadence Weapon's talent. This is In Search of the Youth Crew.
I remember that summer up in the crib, just like Adam with the missing rib. The cocaine kids where they used to live, the hairdresser used to talk, yeah, real, real clear. But I got a great mind, and he's going in the fist. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind of how the dumb monkeys got gorilla in the midst of a struggle via fist for a slice and a fifth. Back then, yeah, I didn't used to rip shirts, I broke out quick, no shit, sure, a lot of nerd hop, no, never, I'd never talk shop. I'd only talk chop like drop your drink, drop your pants, drop your plans, drop your friends, drop your hands, drop a link, pop a lock for young ham, not. We used to grab props and stunts like Bruce. What they're talking about. The youth who's back. 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 The youth who's back.
That was Cadence Weapon, a rapper from Edmonton who's in Toronto for CBC's Hip Hop Summit. And now we turn to another musician who grew up in Edmonton. Vivek Shreya lives in Toronto now, and he's a man of many talents. He's been on stage singing with indie darlings Tegan and Sarah. He's been on TV with Degrassi and Private Practice. And next Thursday, he's going to be showing his short film called Seeking Single White Male as part of the annual South Asian Short Film Festival. In his words, the film is about being brown in queer white spaces. And creating the film brought up a lot of personal issues for Vivek Shreya, including his issues of faith. Big City's Aparta Bhandari met up with him at a Hindu temple to find out more.
We are at the Ganesh Temple in Richmond Hill, and I haven't actually ever been to a temple in Toronto before, even though I've lived here for 8 years.
I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta. My parents immigrated there in the 70s from India. And thankfully, there was a bit of a South Asian population there, which was really beneficial for my parents because they wanted to preserve as many of their customs and traditions as possible, of course, but also introduce us to them. And this meant that we had somewhere where we could learn how to speak the language. We got to learn how to dance Kolata style, so hitting sticks together and going around in a circle. We'd also get to celebrate big festivals together. So like Diwali, my mom would powder our faces and put little Nehru hats on our heads. And we'd go to the community center and celebrate together. So now we're standing in front of Sri Balaji's statue and a priest is chanting. So Balaji, my understanding, is a form of Vishnu. My mom says her whole life she always knew that she wanted kids, and she always knew she wanted two boys. I think this partly has to do with the way that she was raised as a girl and has seen the ways that women have been treated in her life. So she prayed and prayed and prayed for two healthy sons. And so there's this tradition in India where if you pray to this particular deity and you ask for something and you receive it, then you must go to this temple and shave your hair off as a sacrifice, as a gesture of thanks. But this meant for the first 2 years of my life, because I was first born, and my mom was happy about that. But then instead of going right away to India, she thought, well, let's save on some money and see what happens next. So then they made another boy, and then we went to India together.
So for that, for the first 2 years of my life, I was mistaken for a girl, which I often cheekily wonder how that might have impacted who I am.
Jai Shri Ganesha Vigna Nasha Gajanana. Jai Shri Ganesha Vigna Nasha Gajanana. Vidya Buddhi Sarva Siddhi Puranjana.
Ever since I was a child, there was something about Hindu iconography and the puja room or the prayer room that really captured me. It was a space where I could sing and express my emotion and be who I was without any judgment. When I was in junior high and high school, that space became even more important to me because I felt like I didn't belong in a lot of ways in school, but particularly because I started recognizing that I was queer. When I first started making pop records, the producers that I was working with were very much intent on me using sitars and tablas on the record, and I was adamant against that because it felt like just because I was brown that it was important for my music to feature these instruments, and it didn't feel fitting with the music that I was making. But the older I've gotten, the more I am interested in exploring those parts of my identity in more appropriate ventures, such as a collection of short stories that I put out last year called God Loves Hair, which is a coming-of-age book that speaks to my experience of growing up as the son of South Asian immigrants, struggling with my sexuality and my gender. I think art is this really powerful tool to be able to work through these parts of who you are while also giving visibility to these issues, because often they're things that people don't want to talk about or that people aren't aware of or that make people uncomfortable.
Jai Shri Ganesha Vigna Nasha Gajanana.
Thanks to Aparta Bhandari for that story. Vivek Shreya's short film Seeking Single White Male is screening next Thursday at Monitor 7. Monitor 7 is an annual South Asian short film and video festival taking place at Innes Town Hall. As I mentioned before, Vivek is also a musician. This is one of his songs, Fire and Fall.
See my face stained on the moon. Feel my breath woven into cool. In fire and fall, know my song. In sleep and in dreams, be my song. Taste my blood in your wine. Feel fire and fall, I will burn in sleep and in dreams. I'll return, go down to where the sun is sleeping.
That was Vivek Shreya's Fire and Fall. A man with many talents, he'll be showing his film Seeking Single White Male at Innes Town Hall on Thursday. And that's our show. I had a good time with you. If you want more Big City, you should join us on Facebook. Just go to cbc.ca/BigCitySmallWorld or go to Facebook and look up Big City Small World. In the meantime, have some fun tonight, okay? Even if that means eating popcorn in your jammies. Thanks to the gorgeous Garvia Bailey for production help on this week's show. Kim Holmgren is my technician and Susan Margetti is the manager of CBC Toronto. I'm going to leave you with a little something. There's going to be a celebration of Ethiopian Eritrean jazz funk next Friday at the Music Gallery. It's a music movement that started with Ethiopian pioneer Mulatu Astatke. This is his song called Inoubliable Cherie. I'm Nanaba Duncan. This is Big City Small World. Bye! Thank you.